From the stuff your mother never told you to the stuff your doctor never learned, On Health is what happens when a midwife plus a Yale-trained MD shares about all things women's health, from periods to menopause, sex to reproductive health politics, motherhood to mental health. Join me for taboo-busting conversations that demystify and destigmatize our bodies, all while bridging the gap between conventional medicine and wellness. Along the way, we'll be exploring the science and wisdom of how our bodies work, what makes us well, what gets in the way, and how we can live our best lives on our terms. When it comes to women's health and well-being, there's nothing we won't talk about. The new medicine for women is here. I'm Dr. Aviva Ram. Welcome to the podcast. Most of you don't know this, but in my medical practice, I put perfectionism, burnout, people-pleasing, fawning, and freezing high on the list of questions I ask my patients about. Because when we're stuck in these modes, feeling all these different feelings, these not only impact our ability to do things that we need to heal and actually enjoy doing those things, because I see so many women get stressed and perfectionistic about that, but they also have a huge impact on our internal state. When we're in those modes, this can impact everything from our immunity to our heart health, our hormones to our metabolism, our sleep to our mood. And here's the thing. Most women don't look like they're falling apart, even when we feel like we are. We're raising kids, running households, showing up to work, taking care of everyone else, while so many of us, and yes, I say we, and I say us, because I'm in here with you too, are carrying silent grief, anxiety, and trauma. I'm Dr. Aviva Ram, herbalist and midwife, and welcome to this episode, The High Cost of I'm Fine When Your Nervous System Breaks the Silence. This episode is for all of us. It's for the women carrying high-functioning anxiety who keep the calendar moving, who keep everyone fed, remember the birthdays, show up to the Zoom calls with a smile, and feel like they're gasping for air underneath it all. It's for those of us with high-functioning depression who look like we're managing but feel hollow, disconnected, exhausted, and in a way that no amount of sleep seems to fix. It's for all of the women who are always showing up and sometimes quietly falling apart. And it's for everyone who's ever thought it's not bad enough to ask for help. My guest today, UK-based integrative psychotherapist Helen Marie, makes visible what is so often unseen. She's here to offer what she does best, language that wraps around our pain and says, I see you, let's be gentle with you. This episode is an invitation to reclaim your emotional truth, soften your nervous system, and maybe, just maybe, choose yourself. Helen specializes in trauma, self-worth, anxiety, and relationships. After a career in public health, she retrained in her 40s, earning her postgraduate diploma in psychotherapy and counseling. And she's a registered member of the British Association for Counseling and Psychotherapy and a certified clinical trauma practitioner. In 2024, she released her debut book, Choose Again, with Penguin Random House's eBury print. And it's a gentle guide to self-love, boundaries, and emotional healing. Helen also hosts the podcast, I Don't Think We Talk About Enough, where she explores the often unspoken realities of mental health and well-being. Helen, welcome to the show.
Oh, Aviva, thank you so much for inviting me. I was so looking forward to meeting you. And thank you for such a lovely introduction. I felt quite tearful when you said about being seen, and because that's what I always aim to do with my followers and my clients is really we all just want to be seen, don't we?
I believe we do. Yes. I came across your Instagram. That's how I got exposed to you, the wonders of the modern world. I think you were following me and your posts popped up in my feed. I felt so honored when I looked at your feed and your following. And I don't follow a ton of people, but I did follow you back because I found that your messages are gentle and soft and just sometimes they're kind of a daily reminder for me to be more kind to myself, which I know is such a theme of what you do. And your words feel like such a balm. I'm sure not just to me. I'm wondering where the work around burnout, trauma, perfectionism, anxiety, all the things began for you. And I'm especially curious because you had a shift in your career, not a change, like you were on a trajectory of already helping people, but you did make some change. So was there a moment for you, an incident, a breaking point, something in your life that kind of, a personal truth that cracked you open to doing this work?
There was, and thank you for asking. And I actually took a really big career break when the children were little. And I always thought, well, no, they're about 10, 8, and 6. I've got 3 children. They were 10, 8, and 6 at the time. And I really noticed they needed me. And I was in a position to be there for them more. So I really struggled to hand my notice in on that former career because I loved it. I was a public health specialist. I loved my work, passionate about it. But I felt my children needed me. So I took some time off. And actually, during that time, I'm really glad I did because someone very close to us developed a really severe mental health problem. And it was incredibly traumatic to go through. And actually, it took a lot of my resources, an awful lot of my resources, being, you know, who I was at the time. And that journey really changed me. And I decided when people were better to, because obviously that's their story and I can't share their story here. Obviously, I can share that I went through it as the caregiver. But I decided that with all the help this person had got, I'd love to go back and train and retrain and give back what we'd gained so much from as a family over those few years that were so traumatic. You never think you're going to get through it. And the therapists and the psychiatrists that worked with us were so incredible. I decided to go back and retrain. And what was really beautiful when I went back to retrain, because I wasn't, although I was in a caring environment before in public health, it was very different from psychotherapy. And I remember in the interview, I had to explain why I wanted to train. And I shared the story. And the psychotherapist interviewing me said, gosh, that must have been so hard for you. And not once, I burst into tears because not once someone had actually identified how hard it must have been for the carer. And I thought, yeah, and I can see you nodding there. It's so traumatic for them as well. And then when I actually did my training, what was so, and I don't know why I'd never not thought of it really, or never thought of it, was every single therapist that taught us here in London had a story for why they had trained. And I really felt like, ah, this is where I'm meant to be. We've all been through something. We deeply get it. And yeah, that's, and I, you know, never look back. Just absolutely the right career choice.
Thank you for sharing that. And yes, I was nodding. I was a mom of 4, starting medical residency. And a few days before, a very close family member went into a very severe mental health crisis to the point that I actually had, and I was a caregiver, I actually had to call up my residency director and ask to start a week late. Thankfully, he was so gracious. But this is not, anyone who's been in medical training or residency, you don't just call up and say, I have to start residency a week later. I mean, it has to be really serious. And I think that, you know, to what you're saying, it's not just the caregiver who's going through all of this, but sometimes what the caregiver is going through, I know for myself, there was almost a level of guilt or shame or embarrassment that a family member was going through this. And then when I did have to return to work, which I did, the inability to also share the story fully and not wanting to have silence or shame around it, but it was someone else's story. So that's, it adds another interesting layer when we're going through something with someone else, but we can't really fully talk about it because it's their story.
And I'm so, isn't that interesting how we both have a very similar experience there? And isn't it beautiful that when you open up and talk, someone else feels safe enough to open up and talk about their experience?
Absolutely.
And it releases that feeling of shame. And but you're so right that understanding that it's not your story, but understanding that it is your story from your perspective. So you have to be quite boundaried with what you share, but you still went through it. And it's incredibly life-changing in who you feel as a person.
And it's so true what you say about when we open up about it. I had a gathering at my house of a number of students that are in a practitioner level training program. So I'm the physician, midwife, herbalist, guru leading this program. And I have these women in my house and they're walking around my house and saying how beautiful it is. And I was, and just how together my life seems. And we happen to be in a space in my house where one of the family members who had had a mental health crisis, we weren't living in this house at the time, but I was saying, it's not always what it seems on the surface. It's just that sometimes we don't share all the stories that are happening. And when I shared that I had had a child who went through a very significant mental health challenge, a couple of the women started crying. Some of them had, they were, you know, these were MDs, nurse practitioners, certified nurse midwives, other health professionals who are holding it down for other people and showing up professionally. One of them had a story of an adult child who had a severe addiction problem. One of them, a child who had a suicide attempt, an alcoholic family member. And it really comes around to something that you say that I really want to dive into, which is anxiety doesn't have a look. Depression doesn't have a look. And as I shared in the introduction, and I see this in my medical practice all the time, I see it among women I know just in my daily life, that so many of us are holding so much inside. And this is so often missed. Well, first of all, why is it so often misunderstood that anxiety and depression don't have a look? And then how is it that we live in a culture that so often this is missed?
I think, you know, we touched on it a little while ago when we were talking about our own experiences. There's so much shame that's laced in here, and we don't feel safe to share our experience. We don't feel safe to talk about what we're going through. We have this misconception that we must have it all together at all times and that we must never look like we're failing. And that puts so much pressure on your nervous system when you think about the stress response that, you know, the fact that you could be in fight, flight, or in shutdown, but showing that you're fine. Your body isn't showing you that you're fine. Your body's sending you millions of messages all day long to your mind saying, I'm not fine, I'm not fine. Your mind saying, but you have to act like you're fine because society won't support you if you act like you're not. A lovely doctor I had on my podcast once described it as Dr. Lalita Siglani. She described it as women so often looking like swans, beautiful and graceful, gliding through the water. And no one can see underneath those legs kicking away. I know. And Aviva, that's unsustainable, you know. And so what happens is your body is, as you know, is flooded with cortisol and adrenaline, causing immense inflammation in the bodies of people who aren't handling the anxiety and depression. And then that's what's materializing then, or manifesting then, is physical symptoms such as hormonal problems. I mean, so many physical symptoms of mental health and anxiety, aren't they? But they don't show when you show up in the world. You put this, people seem to be so determined to wear a mask. And what I would say, and I always say it actually, if we felt safe enough to all take that mask off, what a beautiful world we would live in. It's because we don't feel safe.
Supplements can be an important way to fill the gaps in our nutrition and can sometimes be a missing link in what conventional medicine doesn't have to offer. When it comes to a whole host of health concerns we face as women and mothers, finding supplements we can trust isn't always easy. Studies show us that sometimes what we think we're getting isn't actually what's in the bottle. Enter Fullscript, the company I use to meet my own, my family's, and my patients' supplements needs. With over 300 professional quality products carefully curated to meet our needs from preconception to postpartum, menstrual health to menopause, and our overall wellness, and for products for our children and our partners too. Fullscript attests to the quality of their products, getting you as close as possible to what the products say is on the package. And I'm committed to bringing these to you more affordably. If you use the link avivaram.com/supplements, you'll find an automatic 15% discount on every order. And because my work is mission-driven, I make a percentage of profits available to organizations improving maternal health. Don't worry, you'll find the links in the show notes. Join me in getting better nutritional and herbal supplements for you and yours while doing good for mamas and babies too. Most of the women that I know, like I'm sure we would if we were sitting in each other's living rooms actually and having a cup of tea right now, we don't tend to get lost in small talk. We tend to get right into it and get real. I know when I'm with my girlfriends, it just gets real. What's really going on? How are you really doing? And yet, I also know that still, because so much conditioning is around people pleasing, around being positive, I think a lot of us feel also at the same time afraid to either burden someone else with our troubles or are afraid to be judged or lose friendships because someone doesn't want to be in what they might perceive as negative space. So it keeps women from sometimes fully opening up. What do you see around that?
I think as you were saying that, I thought that's a really good point because women do open up in that safe space of friends. Mm-hmm. But what you find is they don't feel safe outside of that. They're wary of judgment. They're wary of criticism. So there is a space in a small group to talk about it. But then what we find is we go out into the world and put that mask back on again. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because the wider world doesn't feel safe. It's constantly dysregulating, isn't it? We don't live, you know, I'm thinking back to how we used to live years ago without the pressures and the social media and the widening of our world. It was much easier to feel safe within maybe a village atmosphere of 200 people. So it just feels there's too many eyes on us now as well, I think.
There do feel like there are a lot of eyes. And I think that I was at a party once. This is really funny. I was pregnant with my fourth baby and somebody asked me, it was a noisy party in an outdoor tent. That baby is 31 now, but it was noisy. I was obviously pregnant and the person asked me what I do, but I thought they said, when am I due? And I said, March. I just said, March. And they said, you march? And I'm like, what? Wait, no, I just asked you what you do for a living and you said you march. And I said, I thought you said, when am I due? And I said, I'm due in March. And I could tell it was a gentleman and the interest just kind of went down, even though I have a really exciting and interesting career. What really struck me in that moment is how often we relate to each other around what we do, what our accomplishments are, rather than who we are and how we feel. Do you think that in some ways that is part of what perpetuates? It's like we're accomplishment oriented, we're achievement oriented, we're productivity oriented rather than just sort of human oriented.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I love the way you shared that story about, you know, losing interest almost as everything, as almost pinning your worth on what you do.
That's what it felt like.
As opposed to who are you? You know, we work a lot in therapy with all the different parts of you. What, you're not just one thing. You, all those different parts that make you up. And I think that's so important. I love the way you brought in the human layer then. I see a big movement over here. I don't know what it's like in the States, but I see a big movement over here towards a real craving for a slower living. And easy. I know I saw that beautiful inhalation of breath you did then. It's just like.
So I do. I think there's a deep hunger for it. I think COVID really shifted people's priorities back to a little bit of a need for, or being more in touch with the need for being home a little more. It's shifting again here. I think people are getting back out into the work world. But yeah, I think that they're, especially the women I know. And actually, a lot of moms I know crave it, but also a lot of women in menopause I'm seeing craving a softer, slower, healthier pace, just to kind of realign with what their nervous system is actually craving. Women are just becoming more aware of their nervous system as something to check in on. So speaking of, so many women are really high functioning, but they're feel like they're drowning. And you mentioned earlier, you just said something about how women are coping with, you know, whether women are able to cope with anxiety or depression or overwhelm. I feel like the amount of things put on us to cope with is actually exceeding normal human capacity to cope. And I wonder what you can help women identify as some of the earliest signs that they might be experiencing nervous system overwhelm or high functioning anxiety or depression, and signs also that they're overriding or ignoring what may actually really call for that slowing down and gentleness.
Yeah, I think one of the first things I would say is looking towards understanding your nervous system. So I think every single person is different. Their lived experience is different, which means their nervous system will react differently. So it's about really becoming in tune with your nervous system. One of the best resources I can guide people towards is Deb Dana, who's in the States. And she's done so much work on the polyvagal theory with Stephen Porges. But her most fascinating work is her audiobook, which is Befriending Your Nervous System. I recommend it to everyone. It's life-changing.
I love her work.
I think the audiobook is 8 hours long. It's phenomenal. And I think we are a society now that are hungry for information about our bodies. We're not just leaving it to chance anymore. So Deb Dana definitely helps you understand your nervous system. And what she does, and what I do in my practice, because I've been trained by her, is teach women to be able to map their nervous system states. So in polyvagal theory, I'll try not to throw too many terms around, but in polyvagal theory, which I work towards, we look at a ladder system, which I place onto the body, metaphorically speaking. And this ladder has three stages. So at the top of the ladder, which I love actually, even if you hold your hand, Aviva, on your chest up here, what do you notice you do as you do that?
Crisscross my fingers.
You crisscross your fingers. But how does your breath feel when you hold your hands?
Outward attention shifts inward and my breathing slows down, my heart rate immediately. It's just become aware of it. And then it just in that awareness, everything slows down a bit.
Exactly.
And I also create a safe container for myself.
Beautiful. Yeah, I noticed you. Yeah, the crossing of the hands. And then I mirrored you, actually. I put my other hand up. So it was a lovely mirroring. But instantly, this is the top rung of the ladder. We call this the ventral vagal state. And when we're here and we take that deeper breath, what happens is, neuroscientifically, our prefrontal cortex comes back online. Our parenting brain, our rationalization, our reasoning, it's more active. We can feel it. We feel safer here. So we call it rest and digest. We hear the world looks safe. There's room for joy. There's room for connection. There's room for authenticity. So I always remind people I work with to just bring their hand here and tap that you can really connect with your ventral vagal state. And there is an abundance of that energy. It doesn't disappear. It's there whenever you need it. Whenever you need a moment, pop your hand here. Your breath is deeper and your back and your world in that moment feels a bit safer. That's the top of the ladder. The next rung of the ladder is here. I put it on my chest, my heart. We call it the sympathetic, and it's your fight flight. You're activated. The world feels a bit unsafe. So you need to do something about it. There's action. You know, so this is our when we're activated. So it could be the alarm's gone off in the morning. There's 101 emails come in. We're activated. We go into fight, flight, sympathetic. And then the last rung is I go down to the belly and I hold my hands here. And this rung is the dorsal. This is the shut down, immobilized or demobilized. We've had enough. The world doesn't feel safe. It's darker. We go into a functional freeze. We can't be bothered. And then actually that can go to quite a deep, low place where if people aren't careful, they feel incredibly low. But we have these three states on our nervous system that actually we go in and out of all day long. So it's about people beginning to understand that they're in fight flight or they've gone into, oh, I don't want to face the day. So when you can begin to understand your nervous system, oh, I've gone into a bit of a shutdown. Oh, I'm in fight flight. What can I do to come back to safety? And that's it, just in that simple exercise, you're giving yourself agency and responsibility to come back to safety. And it feels achievable. It does feel achievable. So I always work with my clients of, let's map your nervous system. Where are you today? Where have you been all week? They might say, oh, I've had a shocker of a week and I just didn't want to get out of bed all week. So we're in dorsal. What can we do? So it's just acknowledging where we are on our nervous system.
Sounds like partly too recognizing that the feelings and the nervous system state don't have to be where we get stuck. It sounds like we have agency to shift out of whether we're in freeze mode or fight flight mode. Can you talk about those different modes? Because when you're in freeze mode, you can feel really stuck. So what is a technique that someone can use if they recognize they're in freeze mode? And there's different levels of it, right? So it creates that feeling like I need a glass of wine and to watch Netflix and veg out, all the way to I'm stuck and I can't get out of stuck in whatever it is in my life right now, to I can't get out of bed.
Yeah.
So along those different tiers of and however else you might describe this experience for women, how might women in that mode get out of that?
It's such a difficult one, isn't it? Because if it was easy, we wouldn't stay stuck. So I think it's about really acknowledging that I'm not saying just do this and you'll fly out of stuck into a nice ventral safe state. I'm not saying that. If you're in stuck, it's really going to take some work and a commitment and an understanding of self. So deep, deep self-compassion. And I always say with my clients and anyone who I talk to about it, meet your nervous system where it's at.
Talk more about that with me.
Yeah, of course. So if you're stuck, you're feeling in a freeze response. It's your body saying, and this is the sign, your body is saying, do you know what? I've had enough. This feels too difficult. I am only one person. It's actually saying, help me. So we are really, really heavy on the self-compassion in this state. And so when we look at tools, and obviously, Aviva, different things work for different people. But scientifically backed tools are things like meditation. Find a meditation that works. Some people with very deep trauma can't sit in stillness, and I understand that. So that might not be for you. If that's not for you, I would say try a very gentle tapping exercise where you just, do you like tapping, Aviva?
I do. In fact, I just did a series this past year for Jessica Ortner on menopause and tapping, which was really fun to record for them.
Wonderful. Well, one of the very simple, I mean, I won't do the whole routine now, but there's online, I would say to people, look up a simple tapping exercise and it takes you through 7 points. But the one we started to start with is just that I'm going to give you a couple of examples actually about tapping and cupping. But the one is you take the tips of the fingers of one hand and tap the outer edge of the other hand.
I'll do that with you while we're talking.
And we just tap gently. And I'm just going to talk through what I notice. And what I say to people is, as they're doing it, talk through mentally what you notice. There's no right or wrong answer. There's just the answer of you. And I notice that even here, sat here recording a podcast with you, I feel my breath deepen. And even in that moment of my breath deepening, I am sending cues of safety to my nervous system. I'm activating my parasympathetic, which will help bring me back to ventral. Now, what I ask of people is, don't expect huge shifts. Just look for the tiny shifts. If you can take the deepest breath you've taken all day, that is hope that your nervous system can move forward. So that can be a beautiful one. And it might, you might say, well, I'm going to say this now, I've taken a deeper breath. Oh, my shoulders have dropped. Okay, the corners of my mouth have turned up instead of down. I feel my brow soften, it relaxes. You know, you can either look like you need a facelift or you've just had a facelift. Your muscles just give so much away. But the beautiful, I would really advise people to look at a tapping exercise online. That can be helpful. The other one I love that I learned from Dr. Scott Lyons, actually, at the Embody Lab. Are you familiar with him?
Mm-mm.
Oh, he's wonderful. He's a somatic practitioner, trauma practitioner. Works with the body.
It's interesting, though, that you said the Embody Lab, because the two things I noticed when I was tapping while we were talking is, one, I immediately started tapping really quickly and then very quickly realized I was tapping quickly and slowed down to more of a heartbeat rhythm. And the other was I felt myself drop into my body. It's so easy, especially on a podcast and on Zoom, and for me particularly, to be kind of operating from the neck up. And then just remembering to drop into my body, which is so important to regrounding ourselves. And so much of anxiety is that feeling of being pulled out.
No, I love that. I loved you sharing that. And I remiss of me not to check in to see what you felt. And it was so beautiful the way you said about you came out of your head and into your body. This is what we need to do with the stuck phase. And this other one I was going to say from Dr. Scott Lyons, or Lyons, I'm not sure how he pronounces it, is to cup your hands and cup, or if it feels safe to do so, cup all over your body, literally take up form, all the way down your arms and literally down your torso, on your belly, down your thighs, legs. And just in that moment, you come. For me, and I'll ask you, Aviva, what do you notice there as you're tapping your entire body?
Yeah, I'm just relaxing my breath so much. I mean, what you said about taking a deeper breath, again, getting more into my root, getting more into my womb, getting out of that intellectual or working harder at something than I have to, rather than just connecting or communicating, it started to settle in.
I love that. And I love the fact that we let go of perfectionism in that moment, you know, and in doing that, we show others that it's safe to let go of being perfect, you know, life happens. But that cupping exercise, I'm glad you found that, because again, one of the things for me is that it just helps people realize that they are a person and what does that person need. So when you were talking about stuck, I love to do a little bit of somatic work. And then I also love to put deep and heavy on the self-compassion. What is the next kindest thing I can do for myself? And just sit with that. You are deserving of that kindness. And to offer yourself that kindness in the same way that you would offer a friend that was struggling. So just a few tools that I come to. Obviously, I have a whole, you know, toolkit for stuck, but they're just a few that I use. So yes, very much. So meeting your nervous system where it's at. So with someone who's in stuck, I'm not going to say to them, go for a run, hit the gym, their nervous system isn't going to want to do that. But if, however, you're in fight flight, I wouldn't say to someone who was really angry, you just need to do a meditation. I would say, go and thump that pillow, go for a run. So meet your nervous system where it's at. And what you do there is complete the cycle of the nervous system. And what happens for so many women when they're going through stress, burnout, anxiety, depression, is they're holding on to all of the angst in their body with no way to release it. So I think it's very key to release.
One of the things that I've noticed in my own self, and this has really started just in late menopause, is new anxieties that I really didn't struggle with before and combined with some sleep issues. And what I've been kind of, I haven't fully articulated this, so bear with me as I try to. But what I've noticed is that sometimes I can have the physical sensation of anxiety, right? The heart racing, the agitation, or that for me, it's more fight or flight, and it's often fight for me. I can go into freeze, but that's not my usual MO. But what happens for me is that I quickly associate the sensations in my body with stories that I'm telling about myself or about my life. And if I can remind myself, this is just an uncomfortable sensation that needs to be discharged or do something with it, the story that's accompanying it. So maybe, for example, I'm working on a book and I'm behind on the schedule that I needed to be on. Actually, my situation is that I can take more time, that's fine, but it creates this internal dynamic. And then I start having thoughts like, oh, this book is never going to be out on time. Maybe I've lost my writing mojo. Oh, the menopause movement's going to like race ahead without me. My book will be too late. It's like just these random thoughts. And then if I can say to myself, okay, what actually is happening here is you're experiencing anxiety. And then I can do something, whether it's going out in the garden or taking some deep breaths or doing something physical, which often is what's going to help. Put on some music and dance is a great one for me. Then the anxiety is released. The thoughts aren't there anymore. So I think I guess what I'm saying is like the story and the anxiety, it can seem like the story is true when you're stuck in the anxiety. If you can break the physical sensation by discharging it or releasing it, then you can be free of the story. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say?
It makes so much sense. And Aviva, I've been there and I'm frequently there. And as you were talking, I was thinking, God, the stories we make up and tell ourselves. And I will often in that situation say, hang on, what's true here?
Yep.
What's actually true? What's fact? Because so often it's not fact, it's stories. But it reminded me as you were talking, I had Martha Beck on my podcast recently talking about her brilliant book, Beyond Anxiety, and how you can't be anxious and creative at the same time.
Yes.
It's so brilliant.
I just have a family member who was going through something recently. And, you know, anxiety is so often worse at night for people. I said, have you considered just knitting? Just picking up some knitting? Because it's hard to be worried while you're dancing, knitting, doing a craft, cooking, right? It just seems like those somatic activities take us out of it.
They do. And that creativity that uses the right hemisphere of the brain stops the left hemisphere doing the overthinking. And another tool I learned recently was write with your non-dominant hand. I couldn't believe how powerful just sitting with a pen and paper, writing with my non-dominant hand, how my mind slowed down and I went into my body and the anxiety dispelled. And actually it enabled me to just go down a few levels. And I felt so calm after about 5 minutes. Unbelievable from using the non-dominant hand.
So breaking the nervous system pattern. So Helen, so many of us are actually dealing with such a significant load that historically we would have been supported in community, or we wouldn't have been bombarded with so much information at once, or expected to keep up with so much in the way that we are. So it's not like everyone can just hit pause on the things that they need to hit pause on, or take an extension on a project, or be home with the kids. How do we integrate the additional demands on our nervous system that are very real?
I think as you were talking there, I was thinking we need to be having more conversations about it. We need to be having these conversations. It's not sustainable. I also think we need to be having conversations around we aren't meant to do life alone. Mm-hmm. We thrive in connection with other safe nervous systems. Find your safe nervous systems around you, people that can regulate themselves. Connect with them, talk to people. It's incredible when even talking about how you feel is giving movement to the emotion. It can help process it, propel it. You can activate another thought process as a coping mechanism. I come back to the question that I said earlier. Ask yourself, what's the next kind thing I can do for myself? I wonder why we think we can do it all, or why we should think we can do it all. I know that I've learned through my training and my own therapy, boundaries. And they've helped me phenomenally, that it's actually quite rare that my workload feels too much now, because I know my limits. And actually, that's a really important point, actually. Start to track your limits. My therapist, because therapists over in the UK when we're training have to have therapy, but I remember my therapist saying to me, and it was a great question, what's come up for you this week, Helen? So think, what does she mean, what's come up for me? And then when you start thinking, okay, what's activated me this week? What's going on? And then, you know, recognizing and catching yourself of, yeah, I've really struggled with that this week. Start to care for yourself. And we talk about it in therapy as reparenting. Start to be the person that you need in your life. Start to be supportive to yourself. I remember another thing she'd always say to me if I was very activated would be things like, Helen, how have you cared for yourself this week? And I was like, I've had no time for that, you know. And actually what I really did need was to roll my yoga mat out, to run my bath. And I always say to people, the moment you think you haven't got time to care for yourself is the moment, exact moment you need to. But on top of that, I would say, don't wait until you need it to do it. Spend every day thinking, how can I build capacity and resources for myself? Well, I know my limits. I know my own self-care and what I need. So it's about understanding what my nervous system needs. It needs me to care for myself. It needs me to have a routine. I thrive on routine. It needs me to have 6 to 8 hours of sleep a night. Oh, actually, I'll talk to you about sleep in a minute. It needs me to roll my yoga mat out. It needs me to get my journal. It needs me to do all of those things that top me up, that make my nervous system go back into ventral. Then I have capacity. And the way I talk about capacity is, imagine a water glass is full to the top, and you've got the water balancing on the top of the glass. Another drop comes in. Maybe it's you've been working really hard, you've got a deadline, and you get called from school and your child's poorly. That drops into the glass and the water glass overflows. And you can't cope. And you've been incredibly activated, or you've gone into shutdown. As a therapist, I work with people about lowering the level of that water glass so that when the drops come in, like the phone calls from school, the poorly children, the deadlines, the drop, 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 you've got room for the drops. And the things that help you lower your water glass are the things I mentioned: valid and real self-care, but also support. Who's your support network around you? Very often when I'm working with clients initially, there's a lack of support, which is why they're finding it so hard. Or there is support and people around them, but they feel lonely in it and don't know how to ask. So there's lots of ways of working, but I can't stress enough about keeping that water level in the glass low so you have resources and capacity to cope with the drip, drip, drip of life.
As a women's health practitioner, I know you're passionate about helping your clients and patients heal, but sometimes it feels like traditional medicine just doesn't have all the answers. And you want to do more, but where do you start? Well, integrative and functional medicine offer incredible possibilities, but those can feel really overwhelming to sort through. And what's the truth and what's just marketing when you see information on the internet? And then there's the wellness world, which is equally confusing, often for us and our clients and patients. This is Dr. Aviva Ram, and this is why I created the Women's Integrative and Functional Medicine Certification Program. Bringing you 40 years of my clinical experience and now 7 years of running this program, it's specifically designed for practitioners like you who are ready to deep dive into a trusted evidence-based approach that also helps you create truly personalized protocols with heart. You'll gain the tools and knowledge to confidently address the root causes of your patient's health challenges, covering everything from hormonal imbalances to autoimmune conditions to gut health and chronic fatigue. And yes, we talk about menopause. Whether you're a health coach, nutritionist, ND, nurse, MD, or other health professional, if you're looking to deepen your practice with comprehensive and effective care strategies, and you'd love to study with me, I invite you to learn more at avivaram.com/WIMI. That's avivaram.com/WIMI. Hope to see you there.
You mentioned journaling, and I've journaled since I was a teenager. I go in and out. Sometimes I've had times in my life, especially during my pregnancies or various inflection points where I journal more. And then sometimes I can go weeks or even a couple of months without it. And recently I've picked up journaling as more of I could actually keep my journal on the kitchen counter with a pen, just as a reminder to have a morning tea or coffee and take a few minutes. I'm so curious about how you journal. I have played with different things, everything from just kind of like dumping out what's going on in my life at the moment to writing in short form, almost like poetic verse, to doing what I once heard called as if journaling. When I was working on my last book, for example, I did an as if journaling where my book is flying off the shelves and women are being transformed by it. So it's like, as if it's already what you hope for, it has already happened. How do you journal? How often? What is your process? I'm so curious.
Oh, I love that. I love that because what you're bringing in there is visualization. And I love the power of visualization. I do that a lot. Actually, that's a really good practice. Actually, we should have talked about that actually in nervous system resetting, you know, mapping is visualize how you'd like to be and look at ways that, you know, that can be incredibly powerful. And I would just mention there, if I come to journaling, that I love to work with running a movie of your life, how you'd like it to look. And it can be so powerful that who's in that movie? Who isn't in that movie? What's going on in that movie? And how can we work towards creating that movie in real life? So visualization is great. So that as if is brilliant.
That makes me want to cry. I love reclaiming ourselves as the narrators of our story, but who's in your movie, who's not? And that comes back to, I believe, what you were talking about earlier of who regulates your nervous system and how to be around more of those people.
Yeah. And it's really powerful. That movie one is incredibly powerful. Actually, it's a beautiful one to journal on.
And what are some others that you use?
I loved, for a long time, I did Julia Cameron, The Artist's Way, Morning Pages. It was almost like free association, like old Freudian kind of technique of just write whatever you see or feel and it'd be amazing where your mind goes. So I used to just start with that and then...
And it's three pages, right?
Three pages. Yeah, and it could just be describing where you are and then... and then what you're thinking and what memory comes. And I love that. Very powerful. But recently, and I love that you asked, I recently found, I can't pronounce her name, so, but she wrote The Book of Alchemy. And it's by, I think her name's Salika Jawad or Juad. I don't know how to pronounce her surname. It's new. It's part of what she learned when she was unwell in hospital by someone who had told her about the 100-day project. And what you do is develop this 100-day habit. And she chose journaling. And she got 100 incredible writers to write a short essay about journaling and writing and creativity, and then provide a beautiful journal prompt at the end. So the essay might only be 2 short pages, and then this, it just takes your mind somewhere, and then the most incredible prompt. I'm midway through that at the moment, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And every day I can't wait to see what the next essay is and prompt. And sometimes I might only write a paragraph, other days I can't stop.
Do you have a special kind of journal or notebook or pen? Like, I have a beautiful white pen and a journal that I have, and then I have a cup that I've been very ritualistic about. I mean, sometimes I'm just at a cafe scribbling away, but how about you?
I love that. I think there's something beautiful about making it ritualistic. And actually, it's so funny because my journal goes with me everywhere. It's here. It's an orange.
Oh. Mine is too. I'm going to grab it. Hold on. Mine's like sun gold color. Wait. Mine's kind of a yellow orange.
That's too funny.
Marigold. No way. It's more marigold. Wait, do we have the same journal?
That's so similar. Is it? Mine is by, I don't know. It's a German maker.
There's Leuchtturm 1917.
Yes.
Mine too. That's so funny.
No, that's so
journal.
Funny. It actually, we have.
And then this is my pen. It's just a paper mate, but it looks so pretty. It's white with a little silver.
Oh, I love it. So it's white. Oh, that's beautiful. Mine is very pale pink, lammy.
And then I draw in mine too. So I'm going to show.
Oh, Aviva, that's beautiful.
I put all kinds of things in mine. We'll have to show the video of this on Instagram.
That's so special.
Yeah, this is just different images
than I
do.
Oh, I love that. Oh, you're so creative. I can't believe we have the same journal.
That's so funny. It's actually the same one.
It's actually the same one.
Well, you know what? I just started using this journal. I have no financial relationship, but what I also discovered after I bought the journal, I accidentally learned in the front few pages is a table of contents that you can actually write your own contents, and it has page numbers on it, which I like because sometimes I'll use my journal. I might have my journal with me and I go to a conference or a talk and I'm inspired and then I write it down, or I'm reading a book and I take notes in my journal. I'm like, wait, where was that? And now I can put it, the page numbers right in the beginning.
Oh, I love that.
Okay, so we talked about journaling.
I'm just going to pick your brains really as a doctor. I was going to talk to you about, I feel that so many women aren't equipped with enough information about menopause. And what I learned recently was, and I'd love to know if this is correct, that when we go through menopause, our ability or our levels of serotonin decline in the gut. And serotonin converts to melatonin to help our sleep, which is why, so I don't know if that's a very simplistic way of putting it, Aviva.
Yes, and our melatonin also goes down in menopause as our estrogen goes down. It's unclear how much of the serotonin-melatonin connection crosses the blood-brain barrier, but there is definitely a correlation between serotonin production, menopause, and melatonin. So many aspects of sleep are impacted by hormones. I mean, the intricacies of all of this, when our estrogen goes down, and that impacts our melatonin. It puts us in a state of lighter sleep, but then also hot flashes increase our cortisol. And so that combination of like a little surge in cortisol at 3 a.m. and that lighter sleep that menopause is creating makes us more inclined to go into a morning wake mode way before. So it's so fascinating.
I was nodding away there because I was like, yes, that's happening. Yes, that's happening.
Yes.
It's so fascinating. We go through a lot, don't we?
We do.
We go through a lot. But I recently learned about 5-HTP, Mm-hmm. And I started taking it as a supplement, and it's really helping my sleep.
Beautiful.
And I just wondered if you had, I thought, I'd pick your brains on that one.
Yes, it's definitely one of the supplements that I put into my sleep protocols. So especially for my patients, it's so much easier for me to do the things for my patients. And you know what's interesting? In having this sleep challenge, I went to my own primary care provider and she basically was like, you just have to deal with it. You're in menopause. And I was like shocked that me of all people as a doctor who's always telling women to not take that for an answer. And of course I didn't take that for an answer, but just was so shocked at coming face to face with just a 100% lack of knowledge of what to do when I was trying to get help. So I didn't have to be my own provider. So that's what I'm working on. You have a book.
I do.
You wrote a book called Choose You. What does it mean to choose you?
So the book is very much about wanting to empower people to understand themselves, that they then understand all of the intricacies of themselves. They understand why they might get anxious. They understand their attachment style. They understand trauma, self-care, boundaries. But ultimately, choosing you is coming back, and for me, coming back to a place, no one's ever asked me that question, Aviva. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
It is. I can't believe after a year of the book being out, no one's ever said, Helen, what does it mean to you? And I think it would mean, and I never even thought about answering it. So I'm really thinking off the top of my head here. But I would think very much it's around that deep breath I took. I matter too. And I think it's about just coming back to taking up form, that I'm able to take up space, that I have a voice, and that deeply I matter too. You know, and a lot of my training was existential. And one of the questions that was put to us very early on, one of the quotes that was put to us very early on was, well, two really. One was, life, this isn't a dress rehearsal. How are you going to choose to live this life? And secondly, live, don't exist. So it really helps me live life with intention. And that's really difficult because you might disappoint some people along the way, you know, as you grow and you change, but the right people stay. And I think it's about encouraging people to honor themselves really and live a life that feels really safe and aligned. Do the work. I've had massive changes in my life since I hit 50, actually. Huge changes.
What are some of those?
Relocation has been the main one, actually. How I run my practice, you know, real changes and just immense gratitude, a life of gratitude, actually. And I feel very privileged to be able to say that here with everything that's going on in the world. I don't want for one minute to people to think that I'm not mindful of the horrors in the world. But living a life of immense gratitude.
I have a question that I ask all my guests. And that is, if you could tell your younger self anything, how old would she be and what would you tell her?
You've made me tearful. I know exactly the age I go to. I'd go to my 15-year-old self and I would say to her, oh, it's so hard. I would say to her, it's better than you could ever, ever, ever imagine. Just keep believing you will get through this and it will be okay. You will find people that will love you and you will have three beautiful children and life will be okay. Yeah. Oh, thank you. That's a beautiful question, Aviva.
Thank you. Well, it is just so nourishing and really softening too. You're like a Mary Poppins of therapy, listening to you talk. That's what I feel like. Like I'm listening to Mary Poppins pull all these beautiful tools and tricks out of this gorgeous fabric bag and share them so gently. And I'm really delighted to meet you in person. And thank you so much for the really, truly the beauty that you're bringing to the world and the beauty that you're bringing also even to the social media landscape for women who live all around the world, because each little dose is just such a nourishing, gentle reminder. Thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. And Aviva, I've not met you before, and you've got such beautiful energy. So thank you. I've really, really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you. The questions were beautiful.
I'm so glad. And my dear listeners, if today's conversation resonated with you, if you have ever felt like you had to hold it together while falling apart on the inside, if you're feeling like that right now, I hope that this conversation leaves you knowing, first of all, that you're not alone. You're not the only one going through that, and you're not broken, and you matter, and your story matters, and you deserve the same gentleness that I know that you are so freely giving to others. So I'm going to remind you, as I remind myself, what Helen asked so deeply and profoundly is, what is the next kindest thing that you can do for yourself? So until next time, please do be kind to yourself. And again, everyone, thank you for joining me.
I hope you enjoyed this episode, that it helped you to feel seen and heard, and perhaps that it even brought you some aha moments. Please share the love by sharing this with a friend or someone in your life who could benefit from the kinds of things we talk about in this space. Also, make sure to follow me on Instagram at dr.avivaram and go to avivaram.com to join the conversation about the show on my blog. While you're there, you can sign up for my free newsletter with tips on taking back your health. Be sure to leave a rating and a review for the podcast and follow the podcast to be notified of new episodes every week. Can't wait to see you next time.